Paranormal Show Live is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the herb.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator...
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, March 21st, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for today's show. We got all sorts of great stuff to talk about today, and also in hour two. Today was that day for the freemybabies.org call-in, where they were trying to shut down the Butte County DA's office over this these child protective services taking the babies of a medical marijuana patient and charging her with felony child endangerment for breastfeeding under the influence of cannabis. We're going to talk about that with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis science segment today at the bottom of the hour as well. And in hour two, I've got a guest from Parents, I forget their exact name, Parents for 215 or something like that, who's going to call in and give us the update on the Daisy Bram situation and how the call-in went today. Before we get to all of that, though, we've got to go to our senior news editor in the virtual studio in Grastoria, Oregon, Cannabis Carrie, who's standing by with the news.
Hi, Russ. How's it going today?
Oh, it's going really, really well, although my eyes are kind of burning. We'll talk about that in a second. But what do we got in the news today?
Well, today we're going to go to the East Coast. The Rhode Island lawmakers are considering not one, but a couple of cannabis reform legislations. Also, we're going to go to Connecticut, where a new poll shows overwhelming support for some cannabis reform there. We're going to look at a new study that shows the effects of cannabinoids on late-stage AIDS patients. And also, we're going to go to San Francisco, that their Department of Health put out some confusing rules this week. We're going to talk about that as well.
All right, all that coming up in the hemp headlines right after this first break. Also, I've got a news story on a judge from Texas who got busted in a Texas hotel room smoking weed. Gosh, who has that happened to before? We'll talk about that in the news as well. Also, NorCal Perps will be calling in with our Ivy Wednesday tune. We got some great reggae today from Kali Buds. And then at the end of the show, time for a radical rant. I kind of mentioned my eyes were burning, and that's because somebody was writing about me and posting things as if I had said them that I had never said. And of course, I have to address that. We're talking about I-502 and the recent article that came out in the Seattle Weekly with my research involved in it about per se DUID statistics. What happened before and after a state passed a per se DUID law? Well, I've done some more digging into the statistics and found even more evidence that this scaremongering about the DUID limit in I-502 is just that, scaremongering. And we'll get all to that in the radical rant on today's show. Also coming up later today, you're going to get a new episode of High Times Free Weed with Danny Danko, followed by the Libra Lounge from deep in the heart of Iowa, and a live edition of the Irie Island Hour coming up on the Normal Network.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to Elliot Beats.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
How's it, everyone? This is Yee from Pepper, and you're listening to The Normal Show Live.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
It is indeed. The state of Rhode Island is looking at legalization of marijuana today. A House Judiciary Committee is reviewing legislation today that would make marijuana legal under an alcohol-style regulation and tax system. It would also remove the criminal penalties, yes, associated with possessing and using cannabis. The law they are considering has a 21 and over age restriction on who could possess marijuana. The bill would have marijuana retailers applying for annual licenses, and they could sell marijuana for $5,000 annually. The wholesalers of marijuana that would supply those retail shops would pay a $50 per ounce excise tax. Citizens over the age of 21 would be allowed to grow up to 3 plants for personal consumption, but they must tag them and pay $100 per plant for the right to grow them. The House Judiciary Committee will also be reviewing a decriminalization measure this week that would replace criminal penalties for possession and use of cannabis with a civil fine not to exceed $100. Now, there were similar bills to both this legalization measure and the decriminalization measure that were introduced last year in the Rhode Island legislature, but none of the cannabis reform bills from 2011 ever received a vote. We will let you know if the Rhode Island legislature has become more progressive about marijuana law reform this year.
Okay, so did they have a limit on possession there? Did I miss that, Carrie?
I think it's an ounce.
Okay, so only an ounce of possession, only 3 plants, retail sales, wholesalers that have to pay licenses. By God, that's not true legalization. I can't vote for that. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. The judges have informed me. Yes, indeed, that is true legalization. So I guess we can vote for that. Kudos to Rhode Island for studying this. I don't know how far this is going to make it through their legislature, but I think finally the dam has broken as far as being able to discuss this, where marijuana legalization is a legitimate topic for debate. Glad to see a medical marijuana state like Rhode Island moving forward and realizing that we just have to legalize this for everyone, or it's just going to continue to be a confusing mess for everyone. And to realize also that there are a lot of tax dollars available there. A lot of dollars that are currently flowing into an underground, unregulated market that could be better serving the people of Rhode Island through through helping their tax base. And, you know, maybe instead of buying a dealer a new skateboard, might help to, you know, get a kid a school lunch or to get a mom some health care or something like that. So we hope these go forward. And please visit our Normal Take Action Center. You can find it at normal.org. Look on the big green box on the right and click on ACT. And it'll take you to where you can find the link to these Rhode Island measures and get your support heard by your legislature.
And more East Coast news. It's a political year, so let the polling begin. A Quinnipiac University poll that was published today shows that Connecticut voters overwhelmingly support medical marijuana for their state. According to the Quinnipiac poll, out of 1,622 registered voters that were polled last week, 68% of them said they supported the legal use of medical marijuana. Douglas Schwartz, who is the Quinnipiac University poll director, said that medical marijuana is supported across the board, and they could not find a particular gender, partisan, income, age, or education group that was opposed to a medical marijuana measure in Connecticut. Now, also on that recent poll, voters were asked about allowing the sale of alcohol on Sundays, something that's illegal right now. Governor Daniel P. Malloy has been pushing to pass a law that allows the sale of alcohol on Sundays, and that law has recently made it out of committee. But unlike allowing medical marijuana, Connecticut voters aren't quite sure they are ready to handle the public having access to liquor on a Sunday. Only 54% to 42% supported a change in the Connecticut alcohol laws. Surprisingly, it is a group of 50 liquor store merchants who are fighting the governor to keep the Sunday liquor law as is. They say the move would allow the largest companies to profit and exclude the small mom and pop shops. Also up, Connecticut voters oppose gas stations to be allowed to sell beer by a 63 to 35% margin. So it looks like on this one, marijuana comes out the winner over alcohol.
Yeah, 68%, you know, two out of three people supporting medical marijuana, yet they can only get a 54% for selling alcohol on Sundays. And that's just amazing. But actually, not really. It suggests to me people are a little better informed about the differences between marijuana and alcohol and realize that granting more access to alcohol is going to lead to more harms, whereas granting more access to medical marijuana helps reduce the harm that patients are facing from their prescription medications or from being undertreated. So maybe at this point, the polls are starting to match reality.
And new rules proposed by the Department of Public Health in San Francisco is targeting medibles, oils, tinctures, kefir, and hash in medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. It's a little confusing, but the memo sent to several dispensaries this week from the Department of Health had the heading Medible Cannabis Edibles Advisory, and recommended that dispensaries, quote, do not produce or dispense syrups, capsules, or other extracts that either require concentrating cannabis active ingredients or that require a chemical production process, unquote. The medical marijuana community has embraced concentrated forms of marijuana, such as tinctures and oils, for the medicinal benefits one can receive without requiring a patient to smoke marijuana. The new memo isn't exactly popular in the Bay Area. The memo tries to address marijuana edibles, or medibles as they are marketed, and is targeting orally taken marijuana products, as they say to, quote, avoid potential hazards associated with edibles pending the development of a statewide regulatory approach. Now, they are asking the dispensaries to limit the production of medical cannabis edibles to non-hazardous foods, such as baked goods, candies, and teas that are clearly labeled medical cannabis edibles. Now, the memo does not mention what it considers a hazardous food. Most of the dispensaries getting the letter will probably just ignore it. A department spokesman said that there is no enforcement mechanisms, and so it is not effectively a ban. Americans for Safer Access said that the vapor pens are becoming popular among patients, and that they use concentrates, and that patients who can't smoke or even vape cannabis can use kefir and hash, even stirring it in hot chocolate or other drinks, as the only way for them to get the health benefits of marijuana. Now, the new rules also seem to conflict with city medical marijuana laws that allow cannabis to be dispensed for medical purposes and defines cannabis as, quote, all parts of the cannabis plant. One more thing worth mentioning here, Russ, using chemical solvents like butane to make concentrates is already illegal under state law. Water and carbon dioxide gas extractions are both safer, and they are both currently legal in California.
Yeah, that illustrates a lot of the confusion there is over hash oil, kefir, you know, preparations and so on from state to state. Every medical marijuana state's different on the issue, and some of them will say, you know, all preparations of cannabis are legal, you know, any preparation thereof. Others treat hash and marijuana differently. So please do learn your law on this one. I do like the part about not putting any concentrates into hazardous foods. By God, don't do that. Only the unhazardous foods. That's an important note. And the other thing that bothers me about this is the thing that we get against marijuana use generally, against medical marijuana use, and in particularly in California, is this idea, this meme that's been running through, medicine's not smoked. There is no smoked medicine. They're always honest about the smoking, the harms of smoking. And California, of course, you know, the anti-smoking state of the union. You can't smoke outside. You can't smoke inside. You can't smoke in restaurants. You can't smoke under your bed at 3 o'clock in the morning under the covers with your flashlight on. I mean, you can't smoke anywhere in California these days. So if that's the case, if we're really got a problem with the smoking, why would you want to try to ban people from using the methods that are non-smokable methods? Wouldn't you want to be encouraging the production of edibles, encouraging the production and use of vaporization and these concentrates that produce less smoke? It just seems logical to me here. And speaking of those little pen vaporizer type devices, I think really there's a part of me that thinks that's part of the problem, is that our technology as tokers is getting to the point where we won't be detectable, where we're going to have these little vapor pens that don't look like a guy holding a joint or have all the problems associated with a big portable vaporizer, and we're going to be able to get away with it. We're going to be able to vaporize and use our cannabis in places where they don't particularly want it, and it's against this technology. That's the reason why they've got the problem, suddenly have the problems with the oils and all of that, is because we once again are smarter than our opponents and are finding ways to get our medicine no matter what they try to do about it.
And since it's Science Wednesday, I'm going to get a little science-y on you. Mount Sinai School of Medicine is one of the top medical universities in the country, and today their researchers published some startling new findings in the online journal PLOS ONE. What they found is that marijuana-like chemicals can trigger receptors on human immune cells that can directly inhibit a type of HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus, that is found in the late-stage AIDS patients. Marijuana has long been used as a treatment for AIDS-related symptoms. It can be used to manage pain, help with debilitating weight loss that comes with the disease, and help combat appetite suppressant. Those are all common side effects that are common in advanced AIDS. Now, this study looked at the marijuana receptors that are found on immune cells, the cannabinoid receptors CB1 and CB2, and monitored how they could influence the spread of the virus. The scientists working on the study are looking to develop drugs that can slow the progression of AIDS. The study's author, Christina Constantino, PhD, is the postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Pharmacology and Systems Therapeutics at Mount Sinai School of Medicine. She said that going in, they already knew that cannabinoid drugs like marijuana has a therapeutic effect on AIDS patients, but they wanted to explore the cannabinoid receptors to try and target them for pharmaceutical interventions that would treat the late-stage AIDS patient and try to halt the progression of the disease without, as Dr. Constantino says, quote, the undesirable side effects of medical marijuana. Now, here is how the cannabinoids work to combat the spread of HIV. The HIV virus infects active immune cells that carry the viral receptor CD4. They make those cells unable to fight off the infections. Now, for that infection to spread, they have to wake up what are called resting immune cells, and they must be activated for the virus to gain entry into the new cells. Now, in advanced HIV, the virus mutates so it can affect the resting cells by using a signaling receptor, CXC4R. Now, when treating the cells with a cannabinoid-like chemical, the CB2 receptors in the cell are triggered. They effectively block the signaling process for that CXCR4, therefore suppressing the infection in those resting cells. Now, the researchers were only working with the CB2 receptors because the CB1 receptors trigger that marijuana-like high. The physicians working on this study targeted the CB2 receptors only for the study, and towards the end of the research, the team then infected healthy immune cells with HIV and treated them with a chemical that triggered the CB2 receptors and found that it did indeed reduce the infection of the remaining cells. The conclusion of the study reveals that a drug based on CB2 receptors would be effective in antiviral drugs only in the late stages of HIV, because HIV does not use that CXC4R to spread the infection until the late stages of the disease. The research team that published this study is now on to developing a mouse model of late-stage HIV in order to test the efficacy of a drug that triggers CB2 in a live organism.
Well, you know, this is remarkable. We'll talk to Dr. Mitch about this at 5:30 in our cannabis science segment. Thank you for that news, Carrie. Appreciate that.
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
All right, this one just in, we go to our Freddie Farrakh Stupid Stoner Story correspondent.
This just in from Texas, Guadalupe County Judge Mike Wiggins announced Tuesday morning he will resign from his position. Wiggins was charged with misdemeanor marijuana possession after an incident at a College Station hotel. Police reports show Wiggins was attending a conference at the Hilton Hotel when a bellman reported smelling what seemed to be burning marijuana on the fifth floor Monday night. Security traced the smell to a room where the 58-year-old Wiggins was staying. Police say Wiggins consented to a search, which turned up a grinder, rolling papers, and a plastic bag of what appeared to be marijuana. He was released on a $3,000 bond. The retirement announcement was made during a regularly scheduled commission court hearing. Wiggins told the court he would provide his official letter of resignation on Monday, March 26th. For weeks, people in Guadalupe County have been asking for Wiggins to step down from office. Jeremiah Arevalo and his group have been protesting in downtown CN for the past several weekends. We decided to name the rally Wiggins Out. It's a nice change of pace when the stupid stoner is a judge. God, who could know the law better to shut up in front of cops than a judge? Don't consent to searches.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
You have made me very angry. Very angry indeed.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey folks, you know our music editors work really hard to bring all this music to you every week, and none does a better job than our own NorCal perps, Kyle, calling in from the Bay Area. How you doing, Kyle?
Not too bad. Thanks so much for that, Russ. We try and bring you guys as much good music as we can.
That's a lot of fun, you know, and the folks that get involved with this, you know, Herb Thrasher does his rock show, and Coleco does a Irie show tonight, and they're starting to get in with these record labels and these bands, and I think, you know, Normal's going to be a really big vehicle for promoting independent music, you know, freedom-loving artists. I'm really happy to be a part of this, and thank you so much for being a part of it.
Oh, well, thank you for the opportunity, Russ.
Yeah, no problem. So what's happening down in the Bay Area for you? Any big changes?
Not much. You know, like that story you were just talking about with the edibles.
Yeah.
I actually recently noticed that in San Francisco when I was in a collective. I was waiting and saw some vendors coming in there and, you know, trying to vend their edibles as they normally do, and completely shot down. You got to go pretty much essentially be working with one collective now as a vendor. You can't be vending to multiple places. There's going to be a lot of changes out here soon.
It's so weird too, because, you know, Colorado's taking kind of the opposite tack. They've got, you know, the medical marijuana infused product manufacturers all over the place. They seem to be going that direction. And now California can't decide whether they want you smoking, whether they don't want you smoking. Is hash good? Is it not good? God, what a mess.
Yeah, and some people don't want regulations because they're afraid that it's going to squeeze them out. But I hate to tell you, a lot of good people are getting squeezed out as it is. So.
Right, right. And that's the thing, you know, people worry about regulation and all that kind of stuff. But it really levels the playing field more than you got now with no regulation. Because now it's just a matter of who's lucky, who's not lucky, who's connected, who's not connected, who's got money, who doesn't got money. You know, at least under regulation and the law, you got a fair shot in court. Or a somewhat fair shot in court, let's say.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Let's get to the music. You got a well-known reggae artist here. All the folks listening to our show know about him, but tell us about the song.
Well, this is off of his album that he released last year, off the Playback EP, which is available on a free download at collybuds.com. Mm-hmm. It's called Holiday. And this is off of his own personal record label that him and his brother started. So he's no longer under a big name. I believe he was first with Columbia or Sony.
Right. Something like
and
that.
And then he decided to break off and start his own, be more for the people. And he loves being with Normal, constantly sends me emails thanking us for everything that we do. And
excellent.
So trying to promote him. He will actually be out in Texas soon before he leaves the U.S., so any of our Texas tokers, be sure to check out his shows coming near you soon.
And Collie Buds, if you're listening, do not drive through Sierra Blanca. That is not the place to be.
Definitely don't want to go through there.
All right, so Collie Buds on tour, coming to Texas, and this is some music from Collie Buds. It's Holiday, produced by Homegrown Kush. This is Collie Buds for your Irie Wednesday. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you, Russ. See ya.
Weekend come, tell the boss to take a wrench, yeah. Cause the overtime it ain't working out, so gotta take a little time out for myself. Going on a holiday, yes I need to get away. Going on a holiday, yeah. Yes I need to get away, yeah. Too much labor, hard work, I'm in need of a raise. Every day I find myself with my mind in some other place. I'd rather be, I'd rather go, I'd rather see. Cause I'm fed up of living a week to week. Friday come a little paycheck. 9 to 5 thing ain't working out. So gotta take a little time out for myself. Yeah, weekend come, tell the boss I take a rain check. Cause the overtime it ain't working out now. Gotta take a little time out for myself. Going on a holiday. Yes, I need to get away. Going on a holiday, yeah. Yes, I need to get away, yeah. Yeah, don't call me lazy cause I do my sharing. I need some time and what's fair is fair. It's 5 o'clock, I'm done, that's it, I swear. If the boss asks me one more thing, you know I don't care. Oh no, I don't care. No, I don't care. Oh no, I don't care. Got up in a week to week. Friday come a little paycheck. 9 to 5, it ain't working out now. Gotta take a little time out for myself. So take a rain check. Cause the overtime it ain't working out now. Gotta take a little time out for myself. Going on a holiday. Yes, I need to get away. Weekend come, tell the boss to take a rain check. Cause the overtime it ain't.
Hey, tokers and tokettes, this is Radical Russ from Normal Show Live. We're proud to be the voice of the marijuana nation and proud to have you on our team. Now, you can represent NSL in your own Normal Show Live gear from handmadeapparel.biz. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel is one of us and a huge supporter of our show. He's designed the classic blockhead line of NSL shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. Worn by Radical Russ, Cannabis Carry, and Ganja John on the show and at live events, the designs feature their iconic logos and the It's Got to Be 420 Somewhere in the World tagline. Proceeds directly benefit Normal Show Live and HandmadeApparel.biz, one of our community's strongest supporters. You can also get your Cannabis Cure UK, Ganja John Show, Irie Island Hour, and more gear from the Normal Network at HandmadeApparel.biz. Visit HandmadeApparel.biz today.
The children!
My God! Won't somebody think of the children?
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do it.
Who would you rather your kids talk to about drugs? You? Or some guy? When your kids find out you've been lying to them about marijuana, who will they trust? Let's have a rational discussion about drug reform. Let's tax and regulate marijuana, restrict youth access, and create safer communities.
Catch Normal News with Cannabis Carry every weekday on Normal Show Live at 7 p.m. Eastern, here on the Normal Network. It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, we're going to have to get a lot of cannabis science in a little bit of time. So welcome back, Dr. Mitch. How are you?
Having a great day.
We reported earlier, Carrie reported in the news about this new study that has come out, just breaking about a marijuana-like compound being used to treat late-stage HIV. And I was just wondering if you followed up on that study and anything else you can tell us about it.
As Carrie mentioned, the results are still preliminary. It's really, really promising. I talked to one of my pals who does simian HIV research. He says it's too early to start getting excited, and they're just worried that people are going to take this and assume, like, now all bets are off and they don't have to have safe sex anymore. We really don't want to see that happen. Nevertheless, this is probably one of the more promising things we've seen outside of the, you know, those standard multi-chemical cocktails that have all these outrageous side effects. So fingers are crossed, but it's not time to take off the condoms just yet.
There you go. And we want to remind everyone that you can get your live questions in here. For Dr. Mitch Earlywine, it's 4:34 p.m. Pacific. So if you're in this live time, you can go ahead and give us a call at 971-533-7111. It's right there on the screen. Or you can get into our chat room at live.normal.org. You can send a message directly to Carrie or to myself, or just put it in the chat room, and we'll try to get to all of your questions. I have a few that are built up here from the past week. A lot of people have emailed me asking about some questions. I can run them by you. Today, there was a major protest of the Butte County District Attorney's Office, who are prosecuting a medical marijuana patient named Daisy Bram. Her full story is at freemybabies.org. And prosecuting her because she was breastfeeding her 3-week-old and her 15-month-old. And they say, well, you're breastfeeding under the influence of cannabis. That's felony child endangerment. Dr. Mitch, what can you tell us about mothers and breastfeeding and use of cannabis?
So as it turns out, at least from the data we have from other primates, the amount of THC that would actually end up in breast milk at absolute most would be 2% of what the mother smokes, which in all honesty, I just can't imagine that having any impact on a child, even if the child was like this little preemie, little bitty dinky thing. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, if we're really worried about this, a breastfeeding mom could pump and dump. You know, if she happened to get high once in a while, pump that next breast milk and throw it away, and then just go to the subsequent breast milk that's going to build up later, and there would be essentially no THC in that. So the idea that this is felony child endangerment is just more alarmist insanity, and I think it's really disappointing and upsetting.
Yeah, you know, every time we get to these kind of scare stories about mothers and cannabis, I just can't help but think of all the little hippie kids I see at Hempfest, or all the you know, the Rastafarian babies out there. It's like, how did these folks not you know, go the way of the dodo bird if there was any sort of major problem with marijuana use and raising kids? I mean, we don't have any evidence that it's harming these kids, even if they are getting that 2%, right?
Well, and in fact, we, you know, we have data suggesting even when they're still inside the mother's body, it's incredibly difficult to detect negative consequences with that, even though, you know, I did mention that it does tend to increase rates of ending up in the NICU, and now I'm all as paranoid as everybody else. We're still talking about something that's really minor, even when the baby's right inside. Mm-hmm. So this is clearly an exaggerated situation.
Yeah, more fear-mongering, more scaring of expectant mothers. And of course, the negative side effect of this is mothers that hear about this prosecution are going to not want to get involved in their prenatal and neonatal care and be honest with their doctors for fear of getting busted or having their kids taken away.
And then the sad thing is, and that's never recorded in their medical records, so then when we later try to go back and do studies on this topic, it's going to be all contaminated and make it look like there might be an effect when really there isn't.
Yeah, that's something we should always underline anytime we're talking about polls or studies on marijuana. Is the biggest confounder of all is the fact that it's illegal. And you can't really get accurate data or do accurate studies when people are afraid to be honest about what you're asking about. So let's keep that in mind. All right, let me go to a question here. Actually, someone had forwarded me a link to Fox News, and so I didn't click on it. And then they forwarded it to me again, and I didn't click on it. But then the third time, I saw this Fox News link, and it was an interview with a senior managing health editor of FoxNews.com, a Dr. Manny Alvarez, who sat down with the medicine hunter, Chris Killam. And they did an interview, and it's all about the neuroprotective effects of cannabis. And that was the big headline on the story was researchers study neuroprotective properties in cannabis. So what is it that they're just finding out at Fox News about the neuroprotective properties of cannabis?
The sad thing is we've been talking about this for over a year now, but basically every cannabinoid we've ever put in a Petri dish has these amazing antioxidant effects. So the general, you know, combustion that's basically going on in our bodies all the time that's creating these free radicals when we're digesting and things that, you know, would later put us at risk for some crazy age-related and cancer-related problems, it looks like the cannabinoids really keep those to a minimum. We're also seeing some interesting things with curry powder and other plants, so, I mean, it's not like this is a giant surprise. But the fact that it took this long for Fox News to even suggest that it might be possible is certainly yet another indicator that Fox News is behind the times.
There we go, or a misnomer. It's not exactly news at this point, but glad to see that they're reporting on it. And we're taking calls here at 971-533-7111 if you got a call for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, or you can send them through our chat room where we're now getting some questions coming in. And the first one comes in from Canadude, who wants to know, can you please explain how building tolerance for marijuana to higher regular doses happens with respect to pain control? We've talked about this before, where sometimes too much of a dose isn't as good as the Goldilocks dose. Can you explain that on with respect to pain management and tolerance?
The curious thing is we've, you know, mentioned before that a little dab will do ya, but in fact, in an individual session, we've seen that too much actually heightens sensitivity to pain rather than helping it. So keeping the doses smaller has an advantage in each individual session, but also across sessions, chronically essentially, you're going to develop tolerance really markedly less fast if you keep those doses small. So the tacit assumption, especially among Americans, is, oh, more is always better. But it turns out, in this case, both acutely and chronically, a little less actually does work better. And in part, it's because there's this sort of biphasic response of the cannabinoid receptor to THC, so that you have a big response in the beginning at low doses, and then it kind of backs off later, much like you'd notice sometimes in your response to sativa as a sort of stimulating effect and then later a sedative effect. It's a good parallel.
All right. Now, to throw you a little bit of a curveball here, we have a birthday question from our birthday boy in the chat room, Normal Stereotype, who just turned, what is it, 13, 14? No, I'm kidding. He's late 20s, I'm sure. But he's got a question here. He knows that you wrote the book on Humor 101 and spent time as a stand-up comedian, so he just wants to know, what's your favorite one-liner?
Henny Youngman goes to the airport and says, can you send this bag to Los Angeles, this bag to Miami, and this bag to San Francisco? And they said, no way, we can't do that. And he says, why not? You did it last week.
There we go. All right. Loving that one. And how did I not have the rim shot ready for that? I don't know. There's orchestra's a little bit late. So happy birthday to Stereotype. You got your answer. Also, we've got more chat going on about the whole breastfeeding controversy, and Doc Herbalist wanted to know, how about mothers who drink alcohol? How much of that gets passed on through breastfeeding?
So it's interesting because that literature is nowhere near as extensive. Everybody has sort of taken that as a done deal, but it's looking like in the double digits percentages more, and of course infants are markedly more sensitive to alcohol. So it's not only that more alcohol actually ends up in the breast milk, but the impact of alcohol on an infant is so much worse. So anything in that 10 to actually up to 18% range, which, you know, pharmacologically doesn't even make any sense, but clearly the contribution to the breast milk gets bigger. And more importantly, the impact of alcohol on an infant is markedly worse.
All right. And we got another question here. And this one hits home for one of our chatters and a major contributor to the show, Lively Libra, in that we reported yesterday, Kerry reported yesterday, the Michigan Senate looking at a bill to remove glaucoma as a qualifying condition for medical marijuana. Any thoughts on that?
I understand why they would consider it, because we've got such successful eye drops now, but the problem is they just don't work for everybody. They're literally, you know, 80% of the population with glaucoma seems to respond really well to them, but even the cannabis-based eye drops aren't available here in the United States, and so I urge them to not do that, because even if just one person ends up going blind because they can't get the medicine they need, I think that's really just incredibly unfair.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And to me, you know, I commented on it, how ridiculous it seems when glaucoma was the first medical marijuana patient's condition, Robert Randall, you know, that sued for this. Glaucoma was how we all kind of started to understand that marijuana was something that was medical. So how ironic they'd want to take glaucoma out, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. We are speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and if you didn't get a chance to get your question in on today's show, you can always send an email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com, or wait until next Wednesday when we do this all over again. You can get into our chat room at live.normal.org or call in at 971-533-7111. And our final question for the day comes from Rukamir. We were talking about tolerance, and, you know, it was kind of implied we're talking about tolerance to THC, but does that tolerance also apply to CBD, CBN, and all the others?
It's curious because we have no data on CBN at all with multiple administrations, and CBD, it also has only been done in animals as far as I can tell, and it really depends on the effect. So it's not so much you become tolerant to CBD as you become tolerant to certain individual effects of it. And unfortunately, we're not even sure what those effects are in animals in a way that can be behaviorally measured. We do see some mild tolerance on some of the antioxidant properties, but it's relatively slow and relatively minor.
All right. Well, that does it for our time today on our Cannabis Science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. And we'll do this again next Wednesday. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us.
Looking forward to next week.
When we get back, time for some radical ranting. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
That's the Dirt Ball from Suburban Noise Records, Cottonmouth Kings. This is Normal Show Live. Keep it right here, yeah.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, PhD.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
I was recently interviewed by Keegan Hamilton of the Seattle Weekly regarding my research that I posted here on the Stash blog about per se DUID statutes and the effect they had on DUID arrest statistics, according to the FBI's Uniform Crime Reports. And you can find this post. It's at the blog. It's called 13 States Have Marijuana Per Se DUID Statutes. And I posted a table up there. And basically what I did is I just looked at the arrest data before and after and posted what I found. Now, Keegan's piece was fair, and it was entitled, Marijuana DUI Law Impact Remains Unclear Despite Analysis of Arrest Statistics. Which is true. That's pretty much what I found out, is like you can't really judge it one way or the other. I was just curious to see what we would find. So this is his lead paragraph. He writes, after Nevada enacted a strict per se law restricting the amount of THC motorists are allowed to have in their blood, drug driving arrests increased a whopping 76% statewide. But when a similar policy took effect in Ohio, arrests there decreased by a modest 4.8%. Such is the conflicting data recently presented by Normal, which further muddies the debate about Washington's proposal to legalize marijuana and start treating stone drivers like drunks. And then Keegan goes on later on to fairly report, taken with a sizable grain of salt, it makes it interesting to look at how changes in arrest patterns were markedly different across the country. In addition to the 76% spike in Nevada, Indiana drug driving arrests shot up 33% after adopting a per se THC blood limit, while Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Iowa all saw modest single-digit increases. Five states had single-digit decreases in drug driving arrests. And I thought that was a great way to report it, because it's exactly what I found in the data, is that really it didn't seem to all spike or all go down, or, you know, there was a lot of difference in the data, a lot of variables there. And I thought that was a very fair way to look at it. But for some people, all they had to see was that first sentence with drug driving arrests increased a whopping 76% statewide for them to fire up the laptop for another round of frighten the patient. So frighten the patients and get them to vote against the legalization of marijuana. This is from a post I found out there on the internet entitled, Marijuana DUIs Went Up 76% in Nevada with Per Se Limit. Here's some of the quotes from it. Numbers put the lie to claims Washington's I-502 won't harm patients. Well, if the message you're sending them is open season on medical marijuana patients, then congratulations, mission accomplished. After Nevada enacted a strict per se law restricting the amount of THC motorists are allowed to have in their blood, drugged driving arrests increased 76% statewide, reports Keegan Hamilton at Seattle Weekly. What do you bet that a big portion of the 76% increase in cannabis DUIs came at the expense of medical marijuana patients, many of whom must medicate at a level such that they will show up over the limit at any time they are tested? Well, as Keegan's piece, I mean, if you bothered to read past the first sentence, pointed out, there is no way of knowing how many of those were patients or anything, because the law enforcement agencies haven't been keeping separate track of marijuana DUIDs versus other drug DUIDs versus alcohol DUIDs. Now, let me give you some differences between Nevada and Washington, since the author of that piece was so keen to pick up on that 76% increase in Nevada. Let's point out some of the differences between Nevada and Washington that the author of this piece kind of left out, didn't want to tell you. I mean, they're facts that you could easily glean from reading the entire piece that Keegan wrote in Seattle Weekly, or by paying close attention to the graphic the author included on the post. I mean, I know facts get in the way of sensationalism and page hits, but let's indulge. Nevada can bust you for a per se 2 nanogram per milliliter of THC in blood, a 3 nanogram lower threshold than I-502's 5 nanograms per milliliter. Nevada can bust you per se for 10 nanograms per milliliter of THC in your urine, a standard that I-502 does not include and Washington law currently does not have. Nevada can bust you per se for 15 nanograms per milliliter of THC metabolites in your urine, a standard that I-502 does not include and Washington law currently does not have. And Nevada can set up a roadside sobriety checkpoint and sniff around every driver who passes through, which is unconstitutional in Washington. So yeah, there was a big increase in Nevada, but Nevada is a completely different scenario than Washington State. Also, if the author would care to follow up on the DUID stats in Nevada, I know you're paid for page hits, not for research. But if you looked up the rest of the stats for those years, for the years that Nevada's had medical marijuana since the year 2000, because like that's what I do, I'm paid to actually look up research. You'd find that since medical marijuana passed in 2000, the following numbers: in 2001, 8,800 DUIDs; in 2002, 5,100 DUIDs; in 2003, no data. Then from 2004 on, it goes 9,100, 9,700, 11,000, 12,000, 14,000, 15,000, and in 2002, back down to 13,000. So what is up with 2002 and 2003? Now remember, the 76% increase that was cited here is the 76% increase between 2002, when there were 5,100 DUIDs, and 2004, when there were 9,100 DUIDs. That's a 76% increase. Well, what the hell happened in 2002? Why was it 3,700 DUIs less than 2001? Why was there such a big drop from 2001 to 2002? Well, thanks to the author of this piece writing this thing and slandering me in the captions, it forced me to look a little deeper into the data to answer that question. And here's what I found. In 2002, the number where we get the 5,100 Nevada DUIDs, there were only 3 law enforcement agencies that reported their arrest data to the FBI. In all the other years, there were 31 to 34 Nevada law enforcement agencies reporting their arrest data to the FBI. And in 2003, the year the 2 nanogram per milliliter per se went into effect, Nevada's data was so incomplete, the FBI didn't even bother including it in the FBI's Uniform Crime Report. So yeah, in 2002, there was only 5,100 DUIs listed by 3 law enforcement agencies in the state, not 31 to 34 of them. So you've got an artificially low number there. Now let's concede that there is a pattern of upward arrest trend in DUIDs from 2001 to 2009. In 2001, it was 8,800, in 2009, it's 15,000. There's definitely an upward trend. So I would say it's safe to say that 2002's actual data, if all 31 to 34 law enforcement agencies had reported, would probably be at least as much or more than what it was in 2001. That is, it's got to be at least 8,800 DUIs in 2002, not 5,100. If that's the number, if 8,824 arrests for DUIDs is our baseline number for 2002, that makes the actual increase after the imposition of a per se DUID law in the medical marijuana state of Nevada 3.5%. Yep, went up 3.5%, not 76%. Oh, and here's another thing you get if you look deeply into this data. In 2010, the DUID arrest dropped 12%. 12% drop from 15,200 in 2009 to 13,400 in 2010. Why did they drop 12% when Nevada's medical marijuana program registries were quadrupling the number of applications and new applications outnumbered renewals 2.3 to 1? Now, I kind of knew some of this when I wrote my original piece because the FBI always cautions, you know, don't try to gauge year versus year, state versus state, because the reporting is so, so different. But I decided not to include any of that because I thought people might think, well, Russ, you're trying to cloud the outcome. You're trying to shade the numbers. You know, Nevada looks bad, so you want to, you know, shade it. So I said, all right, I'm just going to make this table. I'm going to point out the exact numbers that the FBI lists so nobody can accuse me of being biased here. But here they are, people pointing out these per se DUIDs, you know, and trying to attack me over this. It's very interesting. And the other thing, too, is that these data, again, don't apply very accurately to Washington at all because none of those other states have legal marijuana. Legal marijuana changes the entire landscape. We can't compare them to these states that still have criminalized marijuana. But since we're illustrating and bringing up the fact that Nevada is a medical marijuana state, that was one of the things he pointed out in the article as well. This is different. Nevada is a medical state. Well, let's take a look at the other significant medical marijuana state in the debate, Michigan. Now, it's true. Michigan's per se passed in 2003 before its medical marijuana law did in 2008. But it's not like those medical marijuana patients in Michigan weren't already toking before the law hit the books. After their per se DUID law passed in 2003, DUIDs dropped 9% from 50,000 to 45,000. Well, what has happened after medical marijuana passed? Because, you know, if you got this per se DUID, of course they're going to use it against patients when medical marijuana passes, right? In 2008, there were 35,000 DUIs. In 2009, 38,000, almost 39. And in 2010, there were 34, almost 35,000 DUIDs in Michigan. So there were 23% fewer DUID arrests in 2010 in Michigan than the year after the per se DUID law hit the books. Even after they registered 131,483 patients, even as the cops there can bust them per se for any nanograms per milliliter in THC of blood or urine. And note, in 2008 and 2009, cops could also bust tokers for the mere presence of metabolites in urine until the 2010 decision at the Michigan Supreme Court ruled that metabolites aren't drugs. And finally, the caption on that blog using my picture without my permission that reads, quote, "Normal's Radical Russ Belville thinks a huge rash of DUIs which might follow passage of I-502's per se DUID limits might be a good thing," is disingenuous and unbecoming of an alleged professional journalist. There is nothing good about anyone getting a DUI they don't deserve. My quote clearly states that if such a thing happened, there would be public outrage. Also, concluding with, quote, "Washington patients, how do you feel about becoming part of a huge rash of DUIs? Radical Russ seems to think you should take one for the cause," is insulting, especially considering I smoke more pot more often than most Washington patients, though I'm once again not surprised to find the author forgetting about the 90% of Washington's tokers who currently don't have protection from prosecution for possession of a pound and a half and 15 mature plants. Folks, we're going to talk more about this in Hour 2 here at Toker Talk Radio, so stick around. Phone number here is 971-533-7111. For Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it. You smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.